Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a very, very special episode of Too Much Movie. I'm Blake Howard. Today, I'm joined by two amazing co-hosts. The first, his art has been commended as being strongly vaginal, which bothers some men. The word itself makes some men uncomfortable. Vagina. It's Chris Candy, everyone. Chris, say hello.
Fucking Jackie Treehorn, man.
And the other man, I mean, he's a nihilist. He's a rug peer. I mean, he forgets the core tenet of life, that this isn't Nam Smokey. We have bowling has rules. It's Rob Belushi, everybody.
They're gonna kill that poor woman.
From the Academy Award-winning writer-director duo, the Coen Brothers.
What is this?
Obviously, you're not a golfer.
Jeff Bridges stars as the dude.
Cocktail?
Careful, man. There's a beverage here.
Are you employed, Mr. Lebowski?
I am not Mr. Lebowski. You're Mr. Lebowski. I'm the dude. So that's what you call me, you know? His dudeness, or duder, or, you know, El Duderino, if you're not into the whole brevity thing.
In the cult classic, The Big Lebowski, John Goodman as Walter.
Uzi.
Uzi?
You didn't think I was rolling out of here naked, did you?
Walter!
Julianne Moore as Maude.
Was that yoga?
It increases the chances of conception.
Increases.
Steve Buscemi as Donnie.
They posted the next round for the tournament.
What do we play?
And John Turturro as
Jesus.
You said it, man. Woo!
The Big Lebowski.
We are, of course, here on Too Much Movie to unpack movies that are simply too much. We're talking about a movie that is so near and dear to my heart. It is 1998's Coen Brothers. The Big Lebowski. And in my hand, I'm showing the boys, I'm nursing my special edition bowling ball that was once my dear departed friend, Dave Grenfell's. His favorite movie of all time was The Big Lebowski. I lovingly called him the dude because he kind of looked like the dude for a long time, had the hair, had the everything. I think this movie is a fucking stone cold masterpiece. I've watched it countless times. The script is unbelievable. The performances are incredible. It's hilarious every single time. The performances, as we do, the quotability of this movie is just so amazing. I think if you look at and unpack the script, you'll see that so many of the lines that everyone says are repeating other lines that other people have said in different ways. It's like a Rubik's Cube of incredible filmmaking mastery and hilarity. And I love it. And it's just the best. And so, of course, it's a perfect candidate for us getting together to talk about it.
Shout out to Dave, man. Much love.
My dude. I walk into my office. This usually sits up on the shelf up there. Now next to a little Jeff Bridges dude bobblehead. And like, I'm kind of like the guys in like Friday Night Lights. You know how they kiss their hand and like touch the roof when they walk out the door. Every time I walk in and out of the office, just give a little kiss, tap my bowling ball. I'm like, I'm here with you, big guy. We're talking about nonsense. We're talking about movies. He also loved Pulp Fiction. Was another one of his favorite movies of all time. He loved Goodfellas. He had an impeccable taste in terrible action film. I miss him. I miss him. I wish that I could have gotten to do one of our big podcasts with him about Lebowski. But today you guys are going to help me eulogize.
We're going to get through it for him.
We're going to get through it.
Well, you'll have Chris Candy, the Little Lebowski, Urban Achiever in his stead, and Rob Belushi, the Human Paraquat.
You Human Paraquat.
Very interesting.
That line is so good that the Coen brothers, that was an improv. That's how good John Goodman is. You know the line, Human Paraquat, is Goodman.
Is that Goodman? No, Lebowski says that.
Bridges says that.
That Human Paraquat is the only improv in the movie.
So, okay.
Okay, that's good to know.
So, first of all, when Philip Seymour Hoffman says necessary means to, necessary means to, when he's ranting out at the wall, that was written?
Yeah, they wrote all the dudes... Like all the dude and this and the interruptions and the layers and the repetition, that's the Coen brothers' cadence in this movie.
Okay.
Like every fucking line, all of it, they ride it. They keep going.
That Brandt repetition about the poor, essentially, like he can't even discuss poverty. Like the robotic repetition of it. I every time I watch it, I'm like, that man is a genius, and I can't believe that was written. But Chris, dude, you pitched Lebowski, didn't you?
We pitched it a long time ago.
It was in the list. It was, and
it's been on the list. But you know, this movie is so big. Like, I mean, it's bigger than Heat almost. Like, this is like Star Wars. We're kind of in a territory of like, it's of so, such a popular, such a well-known
there's
film.
Cults
there's but, cults around
there's
this
achievers.
Movie so,
there's people who practice dudism.
Yeah, it's like I was almost reluctant to do it because it's like had its shine, and I'm sure I don't know well no that's incorrect we're going to give this our own take.
Yes.
But there have been many takes on Lebowski. Mm. I am honored that I get to talk to you guys about my countless observations on this film. It always changes and unfolds. There is something new to it every rewatch. So it's like
a many threaded rug. And
just tying the cinematic landscape together.
Chris, because this came up and I'm like, yeah, Lebowski's great. You know, like you just said, like I was like reluctant. And then I watched it and it was like the fucking Madeleine. You know what I mean? Like bringing me back. I was telling Blake, my senior year of high school, I was on house arrest. So I had to be home at 8 p.m. every night and it got fucking extended because I ran away. So I was well into my 18th year. I was almost 19 when I finally was released from probation and house arrest. And I was telling them every night I watched The Big Lebowski with this dude, Garth House, and then a homegirl's dad. I was hanging out at my homegirl's house a lot once I was broke free of the gym of it all. I watched it every night. And like for good reason, my last night in LA before I went off to college, we went to Hollywood Lanes or whatever that fucking bowling alley was called.
The one down in Torrance. It was in Torrance, right?
No, it was in Hollywood.
Was it? Okay.
It was like Hollywood Bowl or something.
Yeah, I have to double check this. But yeah, I want to talk about locations. But yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Keep going.
Anyway, I mean, and so like just to your point, like, I was watching it last night, like I'm going to watch Lebowski, and then I was just like, oh my God, it's undefeated.
Everyone keeps saying like, and this is the thing that's frustrating with your favorite filmmakers, is that every year a new film from your favorite filmmaker comes around. And then people relitigate to death what is the best film that this person made.
Sure.
It happens with Michael Mann every fucking year. It drives me insane. It happens with Soderbergh, Spike Lee, you name it. Your favorites get relitigated constantly. And I think the truest Coen Brothers fans, you know, I have a fucking Anton Chigurh tattoo on my arm, right? Where is it? There he is. So I'm
it's gotta be that in this neck,
that's what I'm saying. There are,
I mean,
two,
but then you got to throw Fargo in there.
It's like the holy trinity of the Coen brothers for me. We just said them. It's No Country for Old Men, it's Fargo, and it's Lebowski. And just like Lebowski, Fargo continues to unfold and just move you, and be just every character is just absolutely delectable. But people who like dismiss Lebowski, I'm like, you haven't watched it. It's undefeated. It's one of the most hilarious, unique pieces of American modern art that has ever been made. Like, it actually has, it's just, it has everything. Cinema is about feeling and music
and it
scripts
fucking
and
knows it.
Yes, it's got the source and it knows
right.
It. In on the joke while it's telling the joke and executing both things perfectly.
Yeah. I mean, the dude's landlord, played by Jack Keeler, is that how you say his name? Who asked him to come to his show.
Marty.
And I mean, just that one character is worth the price of admission of any movie. If I watched a garbage comedy and they had that landlord who does interpretive dance and wants the dude's notes, I'll be there, man. You know, like that. I'm like, that's one of the greatest characters that's ever been written. And he's just in the, he's one tiny bit of the ephemera of this amazing group of people that are together.
Yeah, the film is like, it's oddly like a Chinatown almost. It's like a lazy Chinatown.
No, it's very much a Chinatown.
Yeah, because
it's very much a Raymond Chandler movie. That's very it's as Chinatown and Collateral and Heat about L.A. and Jackie Brown. It's in that world of getting L.A. so right.
Yeah,
you know. And being like this fucking goofball noir.
Yeah.
With the refuse of the majesty of Hollywood.
Yeah.
And it's, dude, I interrupted you, but it is. It's like,
I also still don't get it. That's the cool thing about this movie. Like, I don't really understand Sam Elliott's character. Like, he's a narrator that engages with the dude. Like, it has this metaphysical part to it that I'm sure a super fan could explain to me. But yeah, this movie just hits so many notes. And like, I think to that point too, it's like, you know, you can make something, right? And you could say you're setting out to make like a goofy, pulpy comedy that's like a, you know, about a PI. And maybe you think you're nailing it. But when you get the Coen brothers to do it, you can just tell that there's like so many attentions to detail. Like we're talking about with the script and the cadence of the writing. Like they are in there at every level. So when you watch it, it's just like a finely tuned supercar, you know. They have everything all the way down to the volume knob handcrafted, and it's just you don't see quality. The film is quality. You don't see quality like that in filmmaking. And you could do this same script with you couldn't recast this thing, redirect this thing, reinterpret this thing. It needs all of these people in it to sing. You know, they tried to do it when they did the very weird sequel of the Jesus.
Yeah.
And
which
just,
Turturro directed.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it's like, again, it's just like you can't really touch it. And you know, I'm sure
I've never been able to bring myself
like
to watch it. I know that that's
I haven't either, but
say.
You
I
can just tell it's like
they gave him, they're like, yeah, man, if you want to go make this, do whatever you want. He's ultimately remaking some kind of European film through that character's lens. And I'm just like, I can't watch this because you don't have Ben Gazzara anymore. Like just rolling in as Jackie Treehorn, the fucking coolest man alive, Killing of a Chinese Bookie, one of my favorite films of all time. You don't just have like that Cassavetes cachet just rolls in for 5 minutes, draws a dick on a piece of paper, walks out of the room, and you still have no fucking clue how big his footprint is in LA. It's just,
It's the funniest fucking bit ever. Like, I just tweeted that the other day. I was like, I was in my car thinking about doing this podcast and then like thinking about Lebowski and just remembering and laughing alone in my car that Treehorn takes a call and draws a dude with a huge dick and it's uncovered as if it's a clue and tears it off and folds it in his pocket and walks out as if like it's the data set and it's uncovered by dude as if it's a clue with like, you know, a very detective-y style of shading. You know, I'm just like, it's such a fucking great bit.
Yeah. I mean, we're literally scratching the surface of like the best characters in this thing, but I mean, this movie, if you haven't seen it, has some of the strongest leading and supporting role characters. Even the day player background characters steal the show. You know, Totoro's buddy who's got the belly, who's doing
Liam.
Liam. It's like, yeah, it's just like, you know.
I love how he snatches with his hands. Going to fuck you up.
Yeah, it's just like
take it away from you and stick it up your ass and pull the fucking trigger till it goes click.
I mean, Chris, Peter's
like, the rich mart, like the rich inciting case lives in Pasadena.
Uh-huh.
Maude has that like transatlantic kind of 40s kind of patois.
Mm-hmm. There,
it's like a detective story that unravels, you know, that what's his name from Miller's Crossing comes in and comments on. He's like, you got everybody, you know, working against each other. It's great stuff. You know, I mean, commenting on the movie at the same time. It's like a fucking funny Chinatown, you know?
Yeah. And so I don't, you know, it's funny. This is Larry a hard one Sellers? For me because I don't really know what to pinpoint or where to pinpoint let's just dive into it, but I will inevitably in like an hour be like, fuck, but what about, you know?
I think we should just start with this. That let's start with the three lead characters.
Yeah. We Jeff need Bridges infrastructure for
as,
this one.
Yeah. As Jeff Bridges as Jeffrey, the dude Lebowski. Not the Big Lebowski, not Jeff Lebowski, the dude. Walter Sobchak, one of the greatest characters of all time, played by John Goodman. And we talked about Fargo very briefly, but Steve Buscemi's Theodore Donald Karabatsos, a.k.a. Donnie, who does nothing but talk incessantly with Peter Stormare's character in Fargo constantly, so much so that they made this movie and don't let him say like more than five words. Shut the fuck up, Donnie. You're out of your element, Donnie. Like, just like they just intentionally cast a guy who's one of the greatest talkers in movies to just tell him to shut the fuck up for the entire movie. That trio of guys, they're just unbelievable. Jeff Bridges is just unbelievable. Goodman, who's basically playing John Milius, is unbelievable. Like, he's so funny. It's just, they are that three guys. I could watch them. I want to go and live in this movie.
Go ahead. Sorry, Rob. Well, hold on.
I don't know if it's like because I went to Wesleyan or what. Like in Hatred of Hippies, it's probably like Richard Nixon, Quentin Tarantino, then Rob Belushi,
Walter Sobchak,
and I fucking love the dude. Like. And what's so great about the dude is the dude abides and his dudeness and all that fucking I'm a chill. He is the most fucking unchill. Like, all that happens throughout the movie is Sobchak gets him fucking riled the fuck up. Every scene he goes to a 10. And he's just constantly fucking freaking out. The only time he's chill is when he's listening to a bowling thing or listening to whale songs, and both times he's woken up with terror of a marmot or a, you know, a punch from a
fucking chicken.
Met Gala valet of Maude Lebowski, you know what I mean? Like, he is not chill And it's so like mother, father, child, the three of them, you know, it's like a Rio Bravo kind of vibe, family, all male family unit kind of deal. And I don't know, the two tender moments are so earned and effective. When finally Walter said it deals with Donnie in a tender way, when being confronted finally with violence, no, these men are coward Donnies, don't worry. He's very gentle with him. And then of course, after the coffee can ashes blow.
Oh God.
And he's like,
That's the funny. Jeffrey. That's one of the funniest scenes that has ever. That's one of the funniest scenes.
But it's so fucking. He's like, I'm sorry, dude. I'm sorry, and he fucking hugs him, and you see the dude's hand comes up. You want to cry.
But yeah, okay. Let's just take that.
It's a movie joke. About friendship.
Yeah, let's take that joke. Right. This is just to prove my point. Bumbling couple of friends don't have enough money to bury their friend who just died, so they get a coffee can.
$180?
And when they go to spray the ashes, the wind is so strong because they don't think it through that it blows back in their faces. That could be executed so poorly. You know, it's just, it's almost too much.
It feels like they go, come on, guys, they need to do this. And like, just
yeah, it's like, if you read it, I don't know how to express it, but like, if this was in the Pink Panther, if this was in Who's Harry Crumb, if this was in any movie of that, you know, it just would be like, oh, okay, maybe kind of like in a slapstick level in a Sellers movie, but it could be done so poorly. This is like the most beautifully architected setup and blow fucking joke, you know? And I think in watching this film, like, oh God, I agree with you. I want to just live in it. And it is 100% a background movie I put on whenever that I want to just unwind and chill the fuck out, because I just want it. I'm just trying to get to this place in my life where I can wear a fucking bathrobe, have a cocktail, and do some fucking Tai Chi on my carpet, man. And guys, my fucking place kind of looked like Lebowski. When I was a kid, my sister dated this dude, and he was like kind of shitty and was like, yeah, dude, you shouldn't see the Big Lebowski. And I was like, why not? And he's like, you'll just want to be him. And he was kind of fucking right. Like, and I like, I've picked up so many fucking cues from this movie in my life that I don't know what's fucking real. All right. I don't know who I'm looking at when I look in the fucking mirror, dude. You know, even to the fucking, that's interesting, man. I've never thought about it that way, actually. Like, what the fuck? I am the human paraquat. I'm fucked. I am. Ugh.
I've wanted to be the dude so much, but in my, since becoming a parent, particularly getting a bit older, I'm like Walter. I'm like, this is Shabbos. I'm not Jewish. And he's like, you're not even Jewish, Walter. You're Catholic. You're Polish Catholic. He goes, dude, I converted.
Well, I'm not buying the dog a beer. It doesn't have fucking papers.
When he says this, you're not even Jewish, the look on fucking Goodman's face. The fucking absolute affront.
And just fucking Jeff Lebowski.
I heard that Cohen brother, I don't know if it was maybe Joel, but like the only direction that Bridges ever asked for was like, do you think dude burned one on the way here?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's so great, like, where he's the funniest with that. I mean, with the Big Lebowski and with fucking Maude Lebowski, where he's just a step behind the information, and then he just like repeats.
But Chris, you said the best line before is like, "You're Butterfield Johnson," and then later on, she's like, "That quote that I was being stupid with about vagina, like that quote." In the middle of that quote, I'm gonna get it because it's so funny. She goes, "The word itself makes some men uncomfortable. Vagina. Oh, yeah. And he goes, oh, yeah. And she goes, yeah, they don't like hearing it. They find it difficult to say. Whereas without batting an eyelid, a man will refer to his dick, his rod, or his Johnson. And he goes, Johnson? And like, so it's like Johnson, the word Johnson then appears when the fucking nihilists get to him. It's just like, this movie is just, it has all these like,
oh,
scene after
this
scene.
This aggression will not stand. This, it opens within the grocery store. Yeah, it's fucking George Bush Sr. talking about,
yeah,
you know, and then
this aggression will not stand.
Writing just, the fucking.
And the politics of it, first of all,
yeah.
Back to your thing about it being an old timey movie, like it's very North by Northwest. It's a mistaken
name. The Big Sleep is
leading off a Big Sleep and North by Northwest, where the scene where he's forced to drink and is picked up, you know, is right out of North by Northwest, and the whole name thing. And you're right, Big Sleep, but that's all I have. I lost.
No, we'll get back to it. But just that idea of these guys and like him saying like Shabbos and like keeping his time sacred. Like he feels like my spirit animal. Like when you've got kids, Robbers, you would know too. It's like sometimes your calendar just starts filling up with shit and you're like, this is Shabbos. I don't leave unless there's an emergency. Like I'm like my Sundays at home, I'm like, this is Shabbos. Like I've said that in my house. I am not Jewish. I do not prescribe to those beliefs, but I've literally quoted this movie as like, that is the mindset right now. This is Shabbos. I'm not doing anything. Nothing's going on. We're not going out unless there's an emergency. It's time for us all to chill. Like this movie is.
Absolutely. And what I was going to say is like the kind of liquid and contradictory energies of the right and the left, you know, like the fascists and the libertarian, the empty libertarians, the subversives, the Malibu sheriff, and the even Sam Elliott.
I mean, say what you want about the tenets of national socialism, at least it's an ethos.
I dabbled in pacifism.
I did not know. Well, Smokey,
I did not know that.
Smokey, dude.
Smokey,
fucking Smokey, dude. I mean. Market zero.
All right, market zero.
Fucking
happy, dude. Crazy fog.
I mean, I don't even know. Like, I feel drunk right now. Like, I don't even know where to go with this one. It's so goddamn good. Like, look, this is a beautiful movie. All right. This is my eulogy for it. It's a beautiful fucking movie. It hits so many beautiful notes, the locations, the sets. It's everything you want a movie to be. It's just fucking perfect, man. You know, and it's not like it falls in this category of easy watching because it's not hyper violent, even though it's violent. You know, it's so fucking good. It's too much.
The tumbleweed at the beginning, right?
I don't get the tumbleweed, but I love it.
With the Sam Elliott thing, it's like
the tumbleweed.
Yeah, it feels like, you know, LA Confident, you know.
Yeah.
That's the Sons of the Pioneers. I made a short film and we used a song from them. And immediately when we used that song, everyone's like, oh, this is just like Lebowski. And it's because these the Sons of the Pioneers. Anyway, sorry.
Just think of the fact that the word Lebowski is done in everything.
Yeah.
Like the dude. Like if you say dude.
I did not know that.
All I see is him. He like conjures in my mind. He's there. It's like, dude, the dude. He's just there. Look, like, and so sometimes you say dude to a friend and you're like, oh, not the dude. Not the dude. Dude, chill or whatever. But like, dude, and the word Lebowski, it's done. If I ever see a girl with green toenail polish, it's over. I'm like, nah, you want a toe?
I'll ask the guys back in the crime lab. I heard they're working shifts.
I mean, the all I was going to say is like the tumbleweed flows all the way from the hills to the ocean, which is what the film does as well. You know, I mean, in the end with Donnie there at the ocean, and it takes you all, you know, it's hard to talk about because it's so many disparate scenes and experiences tied together. by the dude and Walter like a beautiful red rug, you know, and it's a satellite, like it's a not a satellite, like a solar system,
yes,
of interesting voices all around a pretty, like, the dude is amazing, but like a lot of detective stories, he's pretty much unchanged at the end of the movie, even
yeah.
though
yes.
he goes on the
yeah.
wild ride.
It breaks all the writing rules.
Yeah.
And, the only change is he had sex. Like
he got laid and, you know, and it's cool. And he's going to have a kid that he does not care about. Like the dude is an incredible, like they called it, he's a lazy man.
Yeah.
The dude is incredibly that. But there's so much color and imagery of, not just Los Angeles. Like, I love the way they shoot the grocery store. I love the way they shoot the
yeah.
bowling. Like, the fucking credit sequence is beautiful. And it all harkens back to an earlier Los Angeles with all the Busby Berkeley stuff and the dream sequences
yeah.
and just the bowling, you know, the, yes. the bowling credit sequence sets that up nicely, you know, and the Malibu cultish beach, you
yeah.
know, Lord of the Flies kind of vibes of Jackie Treehorn with the Pasadena kind of Orange County vibe, conservative, empty money man. You know, it's like about Hollywood. Do all this work for a fucking empty briefcase, essentially. And in the end, you're still just bowling. You know, and
yeah.
and what it it's like a like a meal that's coursed out with all these really strong, lovely flavors. And
it's a degustation menu. It's like 10 very tiny courses.
Yeah.
But at the end of it, you're like, I can't put my finger on everything, but man alive.
And well, everyone explodes emotionally other than Dami, who dies. But
you know, his heart explodes. Yeah.
His
heart
explodes.
Attack.
Everyone explodes. Maybe Maude too. Maude just kind of stays above it all. But they become unrestrained, right? Like the cab driver within
no, dude.
15 seconds.
Hey man, can you please change it? I hate the fucking Eagles.
Fucking freaks out.
The fuck out of my cab. Fuck you, man.
The Big Lebowski. Okay. I mean, Brandt to me is.
Oh my
the
God!
Best
yeah. All right, yeah. Let's try and hone in on some.
Let's
like,
try and hone in on some.
Let's
games.
Try.
Let's take a quick break.
Maude and Treehorn stay chill, because they are like aristocracy. You know.
Let's take a moment. We're gonna pause. Try and get our shit together, and then we're just gonna come back and talk about. It's impossible to say two favorite characters in this movie because we're just gonna go through this beautiful tapestry of people that form this movie and make it for us after this quick break.
Have you ever wanted to learn a new language? Maybe you were inspired by a recent international trip, became obsessed with a foreign film or TV show, wanted to communicate better with a loved one, or just felt like developing a new skill. With Rosetta Stone, learning a new language is easier than you thought. Rosetta Stone has been a trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered, including Spanish, French, Japanese, Dutch, and more. Learning is immersive and designed for long-term retention, so you fully learn to speak, listen, and even think in that language. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. Listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. What's your perfect night? Is it curling up on the couch for a cozy, peaceful night in? Therapy can feel a bit like that, your comfort place where you replenish your energy. With BetterHelp, get matched with a therapist based on your needs. Entirely online. It's convenient and suited to your schedule. Find comfort this season with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.
At
at Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, this is the supporting cast, right? So if you say the top three people are Bridges, Goodman, and Buscemi, and you probably say Julianne Moore is more Lebowski, she has a couple of scenes in there. You then go down to David Huddleston, who plays the Big Lebowski, his assistant, Brandt.
With Brandt as my witness.
Philip Seymour Hoffman, just as good as any actor has ever been, ever, doing anything. But he's so good as Brandt. Tara Reid. Holy shit. Bunny Lebowski, Tara Reid. Then you get Jackie Treehorn's thug. So Philip Moon and Mark Pellegrino, both excellent actors, both in a million things. Peter Stormare, who's Nihilist number one, or Carl Hungus, as I think many people have known, or Uli Kunkel.
Uli Kunkel.
Uli Kunkel.
Slash Uli Kunkel.
Slash Uli Kunkel. You've then got Flea as Nihilist number two, and then Torsten Voges as Nihilist number three.
Who looks Smokey. A lot like Scott Van Pelt.
So much. Yeah. Smokey, Jimmy Dale Gilmore, amazing. Jack Keller, the dude's landlord, interpretive dance landlord. John Turturro, Jesus Quintana. James G. Hoosier plays Quintana's partner, the guy with the big gut. You got Maud's thugs, but then you've got, like, let's just go to a couple of people. Dom Irrera, L.A. institution.
Legend. Yeah.
In comedy, plays Tony the chauffeur. David Thewlis getting full freako mode on Knox Harrington. The multilingual little freak who hangs out in Maud's, like, would you like a
the
drink?
The video artist.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Would you like a drink? Yeah, the bar's over there.
And then he starts talking. Sandro about Biennale.
And then, of course...
That scene, I'm just laughing at the dude. It's so insane. And
I love how you said that the dude is so mad in that scene. He's so mad.
He's so frustrated.
I fucking hate this guy. He's self-medicating on pot and like White Russians just so that he doesn't strangle this guy to death. It's the best. And then you got Sam Elliott as the stranger. There's so many more, but they're the top lines. And then I guess you've got John Polito, who plays the private Snoop, the guy who comes over to him, another alum.
He's great.
Polito,
good.
Poor Amy Mann plays the Nihilist woman, and Ben Gazzara, of course, the king, Ben Gazzara, one of the gods you support.
Pigs in blanket.
Pigs in blanket.
Which is, that's at Mel's Diner. They're a giant diner, too.
I lived behind the coffee shop where Walter and Lebowski, the dude, go get coffee, and I'm cool. I'm sitting here and have my coffee.
Yeah. That's by LACMA, right?
It's right across from LACMA there. Yeah. You can actually see the Peterson Automotive Museum in the background. Yeah. This movie also, just to kind of just go off what Rob was saying, like, does a really good job. If you're a local in LA, you understand what they're doing, you know, like, with Pasadena, Malibu is a great example of, like, when you go to Malibu, even today, it feels like you're in someone's backyard. Like it feels like it's not yours. Like feels like it's got its own set of rules up there. And
I found that with Beverly Hills after coming to LA to visit you guys. Like,
that's a whole.
Like, we're driving through Beverly Hills. I'm like, what the? And Katie's dear friend, Katie Walsh, was like, they have different cops here. I'm like, what? She's like, there's Beverly Hills Police Department. I'm like,
Malibu's probably so not gross. As gnarly as Beverly Hills. Like, Beverly Hills has kind of this identity to upkeep, but like Malibu, and it's just shown in this movie with that one scene with the cop, Leon Rustem.
Yes.
Dude, that scene, I'm sorry, when he is sitting there, it's one of the top 10 funniest scenes of all time. I'm sorry, I wasn't listening. Oh. Like, He'll hit look on his face with the sunglasses, and he's like, you know, it's like
he has the he's so funny. Like the scene with, we talked about the Maude Lebowski scene where he's like a step behind repeating one word, which is so well written. But the one where he's talking to the Big Lebowski, first of all, what the fuck, when Treehorn's guys are like, what the fuck is this? And he's like, obviously
you're not a bowler.
Yeah. A golfer. He says, obviously you're not a golfer.
Obviously you're not a golfer.
But then when Big Lebowski is like, are you employed, sir? And he's like, employed? And then he's like,
you have a job.
Yeah. On a weekday like this. And what day is this? It's just such great in the moment takes. Like, and Tara Reid's line of, you know, I'll suck your cock for $1,000. Amazing. Brand's response. Very, we love her. Very free spirited. And then she's like, Brand can't watch though, or it's 100. Like, I love that she puts a price on it. It's something that I've used for years. Like, I did it last night.
There's your real price, Rob. There's your real price, yeah. Which we've played before. Real price. Oh, God. Yeah.
I have to say, yeah, it's just a perfectly cast film. But, you know, I'll just say, I love Peter Stormare. He's a freak. He was showing up in so many movies at that time. And, you know, what I like about him is he can be in a bunch of different movies and play. He's just such a fun actor to watch.
They love casting him as a heavy, and I think that in Fargo he's like malevolent and scary and unpredictable.
Very scary.
And in this, what's so funny about Carl Hungus is that he's scary, but he's also like a big bimbo, like he's a big dope, and they're all stupid. And so
you can only
so
imagine what happens next. Yeah. He fixes the cable.
Yeah.
It's just like the fact that he's that guy, and like when you first see him, where he's like asleep in the pool. He's just like, oh, this guy's just an idiot. That's what's so great about this movie, is like all these people who have this inclination to have been wiser, smarter, faster talking, more malevolent, violent. They're just dumb. They're idiots.
Yeah.
And the whole movie is populated with those characters, and they're so lovely. You just want to hang out with those stupid nihilists.
Well, I guess that's also kind of the theme of the movie in a way, is like everyone thinks the dude is the dumb one. But everyone around him actually is very dumb in their own kind of way. You know, and the dude is just kind of coasting through life. But yeah, I really, you know, I think that the whole nihilist triage is really great. And I grew up watching David Huddleston. He was Santa Claus, man. And, you know, he's all of a sudden, Hudsucker Proxy showing up in all these big movies of the Coen brothers. And he's just such like a strong, dominant force. And so him being the Big Lebowski.
Well, like, and all those lines that everyone, you know, I can get you a toe and I'm calmer than you are, dude. Yeah. And, you know,
delivery, Cameron Ure. And someone starts talking, Cameron Ure.
You told Brandt. Brandt told me. I understand.
You told Brandt on the phone. Brandt told me. It's like, I feel like I'm transported to every single communication breakdown between my wife and myself. Like, I know what happened 35 seconds ago. I was there. I want an answer to the question. You know, I feel like I've become the very shitty Big Lebowski. But anyway, all those quotations that everyone knows, it's like they're still so great. But then you get into like this every line, you know, it's like, what are you, a fucking park ranger now? Like it's all gold, man. I mean, there was something I was looking for. This, there's this little like back and forth between dude and Treehorn, and I can't find it, but it's like dude says, maybe for you I still jerk off manually, and Treehorn's like,
auto erotic
I bet you do. You know, it's just like a little, like, two guys saying fuck you to each other with smiles on their faces. You know,
I still like to jerk off manually.
Yeah,
bet you do.
I love the Malibu police chief monologue where he's like, Mr. Treon draws a lot of water in this town. You don't draw shit, Lebowski. And we've got a nice little quiet beach community here, and I aim to keep it nice and quiet. So let's make something plain. I don't like you sucking around, bothering our citizens, Lebowski. I don't like your jerk-off name. I don't like your jerk-off face. I don't like your jerk-off behavior, and I don't like you jerk-off. Do I make myself clear? And he goes, sorry, I wasn't listening.
That's his look. And talk about like a funny rhythm in the edit there. That's a really aggressive scene. Like, he just had a fucking coffee cup hit. And then we cut to, he's in the cab. He's fucking pissing the cab driver off. And he gets ejected from the fucking cab. It's one of the funnier 1-2 punches in a movie where it's just, it doesn't let up. And, you know, we take this movie for granted. People watch it and they just go, yeah, it's great. But, you know, when you get into the weeds on this thing, it is a masterpiece.
Well, and when you watch it, like, I'm not young anymore, you know, but like young people, when you watch it, you remember, like, when Pulp Fiction came out, you know,
right.
Like, I cannot fucking believe what I'm watching right now. It's so far ahead of me, and I'm having so much fun tagging along.
Yeah.
And it still maintains that all these years later.
It's
how did it do when it came out?
It had so if you look at the box office, it had a modest gross, like 47 million, so 46 million gross, and then but it was only made for like $15 million, very cheap at the time. And it had good, decent reviews, but I don't think people like completely cottoned onto the whole thing. Like, I can't imagine having my final take on The Big Lebowski the first time. I think that's very fair. Perfect for our podcast because, you know, we live with these for years. But, like, it instantly became a cult classic basically from then. And it's had midnight screenings. There's Lebowski Fest, which started out in Louisville, Kentucky. The fans of the film started calling themselves Achievers. Like, and then there was literally the Church of the Latter-day Dude was developed in 2005. And that's Dudeism crazy. Was that. And so there's actually also like a scientist named two new discovered species of spiders, Anilosimius Big Lebowski and Anilosimius Dude. So there are like nerds out there in all walks of life, whether it's like cultish psycho fans who we are, what we are, you, if you're listening to this episode, you're finding us. We are you. This is an amazing movie. And now what has happened since it's, you know, last 25 years and the sort of late run of really brilliant Coen Brothers movies, you know, Inside Llewyn Davis and No Country and Burn After Reading and those things, or Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Like, those ones all sort of came.
Burn After Reading is the closest.
Yeah.
To the big,
it's like a compact version of this.
Yes. It's like, yeah. And I was saying that when it came out, I'm like, this is a very funny version of Big Lebowski that I totally love.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a great movie, but so it's actually now it's gotten bigger and bigger to the point where, like, I think 10 years ago, like, Julianne Moore and Jeff Bridges went to Lebowski Fest 2011. That's one of the last times they went there. And then, you know, there was a really great recent thing with Goodman. And I think it was maybe just before or after Jeff Bridges' sort of cancer diagnosis, which he beat, where they got those guys together. They got Buscemi, they got Goodman, and they got Bridges together in the more recent times to talk about their experience of the movie. And they were all kind of floored by that. Also, the Church of Latter-day Dude has now 220,000 Dudist priests ordained on their website. So
that's crazy.
If you guys need an early Christmas present, I'm going to see how I can sign you up to both be Dudist priests. Because I think
that's really funny. If, like, people were going to see some Judas Priest, but like got it wrong and went to like a Judas Priest concert, you know?
They're like, uh-oh.
I found the thing that Jackie Treehorn says. He's like, people forget the brain is the biggest erogenous
zone. Known.
And the dude is like, on you, maybe. On me, it's my dick. He doesn't say
that. He makes a mean cocktail, Jackie.
He's such a fucking, what a fucking idiot. It's so thrown away.
This movie just discards the best. This movie just discards some of the greatest jokes that have ever been in movies. It just throws them out there, and you have to catch them.
All deeply, deeply character based, which makes it so funny. Like, you know, all of it is they're funny.
Stay away from my fucking lady friend.
Yeah.
I like you, man. I'm a Seamus too. It's the scene where he's smoking the doobie, listening to Creedence.
Yeah.
And then he throws it in the back, and then they cut out to the wide, and he just smashes the car into a fucking
dumpster.
Yeah. Like,
he goes right, and then so hard left. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's
that's the movie in a nutshell. Like, the turns are crazy. Another one of those fucking character-based jokes from the dude is when he's like, I mean, it's not even a joke. It's just so fucking funny when he's like, perhaps they towed it. And the dude is so mad. And he's like, you fucking know it's been stolen. With the fucking case in it. I said, we cut off your chance. I mean,
we cut off your chance.
The reverb on Johnson
is so good.
And the sound design. It's like, because he's stoned. So he's like, the look on his face. I mean, it's just like.
How much fun do you reckon Flea had? Like, all these bit players who are massive stars, they would have just had the best fucking time. Like, John Turturro. One of the best working actors of the last 30 years. Serious actor. Serious. He's tonguing the hole of a bowling ball in this movie. Like a dirty little freak. And he's just having the best fucking... He's wearing a hat. He's wearing a do-rag.
It's like one of the best setups for a name of all time when he's fucking... I'll pull it away from you and I'll stick it up your ass and pull the fucking trigger till it goes click. And then Walter goes, Jesus. And he goes, you said it, man. Nobody fuck, you know, it's like.
Yeah, he's a petter ass.
He's that eight-year-old's dude.
Eight-year-old's dude. Need to go tell everyone he was a fucking sex offender.
Which is like fucking heartbreaking. You see this. They're all losers.
Yeah.
But they get to live like a life worth living at the bowling alley. It's so fun.
I think a lot of movies too, like you watch them and it you have to suspend some, you know, disbelief to watch it and just to get into it and kind of be like, all right, I'm watching a movie. This one is like, no, I'm there. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
And these people exist. A lot of directors want to say that to themselves. They want to go like, oh yeah, this person exists, but they don't. This movie, these fucking people exist.
They do exist. You could just,
it's a big world, and this world existed. And you could just see some lazy, lackadaisical, you know, 50-year-old getting churned through the system of it. I mean, he's wearing fucking jellies.
The jellies are so funny. And how about his little, like, when Jackie Treehorn leaves, his little, like,
belly?
Limber, he gets up from the couch and takes his little steps. Yeah.
Yeah,
honestly, the most impressive parts of the movie that stand out to me are, well, how do I phrase this? the parts where I check out maybe only during this film are the Bugsy Berkeley style kind of like psychedelic moments, because they're just such a tonal break from what I'm already enjoying.
Yes.
You know, but those are also unto themselves so fucking iconic. The sets they must have built for those things. You know, Saddam Hussein at the bowling alley, you know, spraying the shoes down. Like, it's just such a fucking crazy movie, and you just don't get those at all. I don't even know how
it's
you
in the,
begin.
It's in the Saddam Hussein Mount Rushmore of movies, that and Hot Shots Part 2. You know,
for Saddam.
for Saddam Hussein.
Did he play that actor I just saw right here?
I think it was the same guy.
Man, Hot Shots Part 2. Oof, what a movie. I just... It's the perfect movie, and God bless them for making it. They're just such juggernauts in the game. And yeah, I don't know what else to say. It's like, where do you go? You know, what's cool about the Coen brothers, I will say, is they make bangers. Like, they just, and they, not every one of them are great, but the movies that are so great, you know?
Profanity.
Well, and there's never really an answer. Like,
right,
you get to participate and think. Like, for a while, I was like, is this about aggression? Is this about, like, is this a parable or a metaphor for, you know? And then I'm like, I could also see them just throwing in all this Bush and fascist and Nazi, you know, like, just to be like, people talk about this shit, but, like, people are assholes. You know what I mean? And, like, it strips the meaning. Like, maybe there is no, you know, like, you can make of it what you want. And I think that's why one of the reasons people like Miller's Crossing is the same way. Like, you can have your own relationship with their films in a way that is very special. And you can love them for your own reasons. You can love the parts of them for your own reasons, you know, and like Fargo's one that everyone loves, and it's a masterpiece. And, like, it is so upsetting to me that I have a hard time, like, the lying, I mean, maybe just because I was the fucking, you know, a liar and know what it is, like, and sometimes I'm a liar, you know, and I'm lying right now. I'm honest. But, like, his, like, the panic lying box that Macy's in, and then the fucking Yamagita of it all. It's just so, I mean, but then McDormand, you know, it's like, she's so accessible and lovely and honest and innocent.
And also,
I mean, not innocent,
my guy, Arthur Lee Allen himself as McDormand's husband. Or Marge, I'll make you some eggs.
Yeah.
Norm.
That guy's great.
Like, two of my favorite
movies. What
is
he doing that? He paints, right?
Paints.
Like, yeah.
He paints.
Wake up and make you some breakfast.
They make the movies that make me feel like
I'm watching reality.
I meet so many people, like, you know, and Rob, you would have this with kids and school families and stuff, and you meet people and you're like, hey. I can't remember people's names. I suck at it because I just meet so many people. So, like, you have all these names in your head, actors, directors, cinematographers, all the people in your life, school friends, blah, blah, blah. I remember Chet Proudfoot. I will never forget that name.
I know.
In my life, it's over.
He's the guy at the
He's at the auto body shop.
American auto body shop. Like, mechanic guy who ends up, like, connecting those things. I will never forget his name. It's done. Coen brothers do that to you.
Of course. I mean, they also, like, they do it in No Country too, where they say sugar so many times, and, like, Lebowski is like, someone should count how many times they fucking say it, you know, or dude. I also love, like, another line that we have to fucking talk about is when dude is all the human paraquat line. What follows after that is You figured, oh, here's a loser, you know, a deadbeat, someone the square community won't give a shit about. And Big Lebowski's like, well, aren't you? And the dude's like, well, yeah.
I love how the dude is a roadie.
He was
for Metallica. What was the tour? The Sound of... Yeah.
Speed of Sound tour.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was an author of the original Port Huron Statement, Seattle 7, and like all these fucking offbeat, you know, subversive.
The original Port Huron Statement.
But you can, you know, I've bumped into these people, you know, that they just like, and God bless them. You know what I mean? Yes. Like they're in their little world. And I guess maybe that's also a part of it. Like someone's little world could have so much stuff going on in it. Like, look at this dude who's just like, you know, renting a weird little one bedroom in San Pedro. And you know what I mean? It's just like, he's kind of
Larry Sellers.
Larry's fucking little Larry Sellers. And well, a good day to you, sir.
You are. Like, there's this family I grew up with in Chicago. It's four sisters and a brother. And the dad and I were very close. And the brother and the dad were very close because, you know, anyway, they're very into Lebowski. And they named their dog Dude. And the dad is so righteous. He's like a great guy. And the son is also great. And their love of this movie is so serious that for a while they lived in like, not La Jolla, but Del Mar. And I'd drive down and I'd visit them. And whenever Paul would open the door, he'd be like, Pilar? he's like, you're being very undude, Rob. And I'm like, Paul, you know, I'm like, this is 30 years ago, man. It becomes, you know, a clean, nice place in your history. And like, that's what I mean. It's what a movie, one of the great things that a movie can do is like intellectual, curious respite, you know, where like you can go on a journey and have feelings about it and detach from desert storm and the rich cannibalize, you know, which they do in the movie, but it just like bask in the humanity of oddball people who we all are. I mean, everyone relates to both Walter and the dude. There's a piece of everyone in both of them and in Donnie, who like we all relate to the guy who's just like a step behind trying to keep up, which is the dude to a larger fashion, and Walter on top of it, you know. And that like when you meet dude in his apartment and you're like Chris is saying, you know, it's just like, yes, this set is so true. These what are they called, bungalow style apartments are all over LA. You're just like this is as wacky and fucking weird and absurd as this movie is. I think everyone loves it because it is still so true.
Yeah
and it's
that's the masterpiece. That's the Coen brothers doing whatever the fuck they want with actors that can do anything and saying, let's fucking have a gas, but let's be excellent.
I mean, this movie probably made bowling alleys cool again. You know, sure. It's like,
it wasn't
Kingpin. It was this. I mean, Kingpin's great. Don't get me wrong, but like,
love Kingpin. But
this movie just like is such a vibe. And it's shot beautifully. That, you know, the panning shot in the beginning of LA, of Los Angeles, like it's a beautiful LA movie. And like, It's also people forget it's an LA movie, but it totally is. You know, a lot of people.
No, it's
I guess, I mean,
that it's the that's exactly what I was going to say, Rob. It's the most LA. It's so LA. It's like when I came to LA, like, I spent a very short. You guys have spent your lives there, but even a short time, I'm like, I like LA because it's weird. It has a weird vibe, and in every new spot, there's another weird vibe. This movie catches its weird vibe.
Dude, that's why, like, the genius of the dude, like, yes. LA. Everyone's like, oh, everything's laid back and chill and, you know, nice houses and whatever.
No, bro.
But inside of the dude is a fucking man about
stress case. Yeah.
LA is psychotic. It's the undercurrents of this city, you know, which Jordan Harper gets, and so many people get right, is a pulsating degradation and like people about to blow.
Yes.
From the pressure of trying to live in this town. And if you spend, like, Chris, I'm sure you relate, but like, if you spend a ton of time in like acting classes and improv classes and like this type of sphere in Hollywood where you're with people who come with an agenda and a dream amidst the wash of characters who are walking around in Hollywood, like, it's palpable how Lebowski it is, you know. It's just like just comets of people hitting this fucking town, leaving the weirdest invisible ink, you know, holes, and nobody gives a fuck because everyone is only worried about getting their shit.
Yeah,
that's why people come to LA to be about them. And I mean, it's like people are like, dating in LA is so hard. It's like, of course. It's like putting up a play in LA, you know what I mean? And people will leave that play in a second to be a fucking, in a, you know, a industrial anything, you know, to be seen. And this movie sees people.
Yeah.
And I love it for that. I love it.
Fun little fact with this movie is when they're leaving Larry's and the car is all fucking broken into, they're eating In-N-Out Burger. And
with the Santana.
I don't know if you'd know this, Blake, but back in the 90s when this movie came out, John Goodman was the voice of In-N-Out Burger radio commercials.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And so it was this very kind of like, he would do. We
they
should
did
find
that.
One.
They, I bet they did that on purpose just to take this piss
just
out
to,
of Goodman.
Yeah,
just so
it was just like a little, like, it was such a little nod to, because his voice was so iconic around like talking about an In-N-Out Burger. It was like, and I think it might have been the only commercial they did, but those were playing on the radio for a long time, and yeah, you know, that's what people did. They talked about places in and around things. So yeah, it's just the beauty. What I meant by it's not an LA movie is it definitely is an LA movie. I guess, to be honest, like Michael Mann and you know, he's really taken charge on kind of owning the LA film.
Yes.
And the Coen brothers just have done it so beautifully. And, you know, it's awesome to say that it's a comedy. The movie is a comedy. Comedies are not made well these days.
No.
And it's like, it would be cool to see if Michael Mann could make a comedy. You know what I mean? It would just be fucking cool to see. And that's what the Coen brothers are. They're unbelievably talented screenwriters and unbelievably talented directors who understand how to make entertainment.
Oh, yeah. Let's take a quick break and then we'll come back for some final thoughts. But I've got to, I'm taking a break just so that I can show the boys two things, little tokens, once treasured by Dave, but, my dear friend Dave, but I have to show them because they're in the office now. So we'll be right back.
Jackie Treehorn wants the deadbeat Lebowski.
I got it. All right, we're back. I'm showing the boys now this.
Oh my god.
The day
beautiful.
Which is great. But what's even crazier is this.
Oh my God.
He's got a he had a talking stranger. So this is obviously like Sam Elliott's character from this movie. There are a bunch of Big Lebowski figures that you could get at the time, but he had this one of the stranger. That if you put batteries in it and you stand him here, it looks like part of a bowling alley set that they all stand on and That's he talks. Crazy.
That's wild.
And he's got like a little drink in his hat. It's just amazing.
How's your sarsaparilla? City sarsaparilla.
Looks like it was sold at San Diego Comic-Con as an exclusive some time ago. But it's all the figures. The dude in his many outfits. And it's just incredible. So it's something that is now takes pride of place in my office. My dude... and my stranger, it's just the best.
And that was your friend. How'd you know your buddy? It was Dave was his name. How'd you know him?
We met online many years ago when Twitter was a fun place to hang, much like you do. And he ran a great video store in Melbourne, or like it's old DVDs and Blu-rays, called Now Showing on High Street. So on Twitter, he was Now Showing High. And we started talking because I would start interacting and he was just so funny and such an amazing film. I was such a movie head, but he was an obsessive and we sort of met online. We met in person many times and then we'd always talk about physical media and I would always pick his brain about where to get things. He would know to get what release of Taxi Driver to buy that still had the 1996 director's commentary by Martin Scorsese that only went to the Criterion Collection Laserdisc, but he would know like which version to buy like that. He was just this, he was like a fucking encyclopedia. But he was also such a sweetheart, such an amazing man. And I remember before I even did One Heat Minute, I challenged him to watch The Big Lebowski 30 times in 30 days because it was his favorite movie. And I said, we should record something. Like this is well before One Heat Minute, right? Like my daughter was only like one and a half, like one and a half when he passed away. And I only started recording One Heat Minute when she was like 6 months old. But years before that, I'd said, you've got to do this. And then much later, once One Heat Minute had started, I was like, I would always love to do a Lebowski show with him. But yeah, he passed away.
You should
away.
Do like 10 frames, you know?
Yeah. I don't know what I'm going to do. I've had an idea. I might tell you guys offline. I've had this crazy, stupid, ambitious idea and I'm probably talking to the right guys about it. But I might take that offline because I may want to do it one day. But man, I loved him. We just spoke constantly. And when he passed, it left a huge gaping hole in my heart. And he had an amazing physical media collection. And now it's with me. And so I cherish it every day.
Good.
He was just a special person. And man, he impacted a lot of people and lots of like comedians and like filmmakers and stuff like knew his store and would go in and shoot the shit with him and stuff like that. So he was just the best. He was like one of those old guys and he fucking started to look like the dude after a while. He had like a big long goatee, he had long hair. He could have rocked the dude's cardigan for sure. Like he could have just rocked it. Yeah. And Melbourne's weather sometimes is hot, Chris, but you've now been to Melbourne. Sometimes it's quite cool. I'm like, he could totally rock that outfit if he really wanted to. But yeah, just a man who cherished movies, cherished his lovely wife, Rach, cherished his mum. And he's just a sweet, sweet man. And so now
right on.
I've got his Big Lebowski bowling ball. I've got his Big Lebowski widescreen VHS tape. I've got all of his treasures and I'm cherishing them every single day because the thought of them in a landfill would have killed my heart. But
God,
well, I'm so glad.
I'm so glad too.
Much love to him, man, and to you. And may he.
What is up with the Melbourne weather? It is fucking. No, it's fucked. It's like, supposedly, like, that's where the hole in the ozone layer was. So yeah, like,
Melbourne weather in summer is ridiculously hot. It's drier heat. So it's a little bit more like LA in that regard, in like the peak of summer, but it's a rainy, cold fucking place. It's at the southern part of Australia.
It's by the half hour. Yes, 1 minute it can be like
so crazy. Melbourne and Sydney have a real New York versus LA rivalry.
Got it.
They're like, we're fucking New York. We're the best. And I'm like, get, and I'm in Sydney and I'm always like, look, you all have shit haircuts. Get a grip. Okay. Like, like Sydney is better. We have better beaches. It is harder to get around because our city is more sprawling, similarly populated, but you know, with love and respect to all of my Melbourne friends, huge Australian film community, both, you know, huge Australian comedian community, all that sort of stuff. Like Melbourne, you know, like I think there's that great Family Guy quote, like they insist upon themselves. Everyone in Melbourne wants to tell you how quickly they're the best city in Australia. I'm like, get a grip. Okay. Just seriously.
I mean, like New York's like that too. Yeah. New York's like, they all, I went to school with a bunch of New Yorkers and they would just fucking shout Brooklyn and New York, best city in the world all day, and like try to talk shit about LA. And I'm like, hey buddy, we don't think about you at all.
Yeah, that's exactly what I say in Sydney. I'm like, I don't think about you at all. Yeah, cool. Like enjoy Melbourne. I'm in Sydney, bitch. It's a beautiful city. It's eclectic. There's an amazing different like ethno diversity all over the city. Like there's these amazing different pockets of people. There's this different substrata of all these different, like, you know, you got going from like working class to like, you know, like upper class, whatever. Like there's all these amazing places. And like I live in like southwestern Sydney. I'm not in the city. I'm not super wealthy guy. You know, my family's pretty modest, you know, modest, maybe lower middle class, you'd call us, right? We live in southwestern Sydney. The other night I went to the gym with my buddies. Actually, no, I'll tell you this one. Maria Lewis.
Well, I saw you go on a little swimming expedition. Yes. I got to see some of that body.
Yeah. So Maria Lewis, my buddy,
our boy is jacked.
We went to see Nosferatu, the new movie. And I said, come back to my place and we'll go for a drive. And so at 10 p.m. in Sydney, there are ocean pools. So right next to some of our great beaches, Bronte, Coogee, there's one Bondi. And so, late at night at 10 p.m., it was like, I got to get the temperature for you. It was still 28 degrees.
28, Celsius?
Yeah, 28 degrees Celsius. I've just got to see if I can get
you. So what is that like? 200 degrees Fahrenheit.
No, it was like 82. It was like 82, but this is like 10 o'clock at night. And I said, let's just go for a drive. So I drove 20 minutes to the beach and I went for a swim in one of many gorgeous evening locations. Went for a swim, looked up at the stars and looked out at the dark ocean. And I'm like, this is the best city in Australia. I don't need to fight
That's
with you.
That's pretty fucking cool.
It was the best. The best. But look, I love you guys and thank you so much for doing this. This one has been on my list probably perennially forever. I'll tell you guys a little bit off air about the idea that I had, but I love this movie so much. And look, I love Dave so much.
What a treat.
Yeah.
For it to be revealed to me again. What a hopeless and self-important asshole I am. To like think like, Lebowski, and then to watch it again and just like remember what a fucking, like the fact that those two guys, Treehorn's guys, switch outfits.
Yeah.
Guys, strong like, men also cry.
Yeah. what a treat. So thank you guys.
Also.
I mean, Jesus Christ. Cry. Never, like, I don't know, like, oh, you the boogle, but you know, it's like, how can you be too cool?
They're good for a reason.
What a fucking miniature asshole I am, you know? So, live and learn. I learned from better guys than me, which are you.
Oh, you're the best, Rob. Stop saying that. I think we all can just agree that anyone who thinks they're better than the Big Lebowski, you're just like David Thewlis. You're just like, ah! That's the noise you make in my head when you start talking. And
see,
I just want to. that's the noise you make in my head. No one will ever convince me that this movie is anything but impenetrably perfect.
Well, it is... tells him he's got a cleft asshole. Remember?
Oh, this is truly one of the greatest of all Too Much movies. Thank you, guys. Love you to pieces. You're the best.
Rest in peace, Dave.
Rest in peace, Dave. Drifting along with the tumbling,
tumbleweed. This is an ad by BetterHelp. What's your perfect night? Is it curling up on the couch for a cozy, peaceful night in? Therapy can feel a bit like that, your comfort place where you replenish your energy. With BetterHelp, get matched with a therapist based on your needs entirely online. It's convenient and suited to your schedule. Find comfort this season with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.